life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Thanks for listening. I am Brian Smith, the man who was bitten by a radioactive MP3. And this is episode 11 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves anime and hates fun. Joining me once again, the hamburger-eating vampire and DEFCON2.co.uk scribe, Anthony Askew. And we welcome back the master of magic, spells and illusion, and tea, and Mega Man, and shouting Crystal Maze catchphrases, Gary Hedges.
Hello!
Hello, Gary. And we're back today to talk about Marvel shows, which have got some sort of Japanese production relation to them. From 1978 all the way up till 2011, now. But with a huge bit missing in the late 80s to mid-1990s, bar one show, because that was when they, around, it's almost exactly the same time at which Deke switched to using mainly Korean and Singapore studios, happened exactly around the same time with Marvel as well, so there's like a cut-off point of the late 80s where they suddenly stopped using Japanese talent. And the one thing, the big difference here with Deeks is Marvel really didn't want to let you know that there's any Japanese talent working on any of these shows, because I could not find the names of anybody in the cast lists on IMDb or anywhere. It's all, you wouldn't know any Japanese talent was involved. Or
that's a very dirty move by Marvel, I think. Very dirty.
It's just not listing sort of animators. It's sort of like the animation process stops at layouts, and somehow the animation was magically done to turn into a full cartoon. But we shall start, not in animation, but in live action, with the 1978 Japanese live-action Spider-Man TV series.
Spider-Man!
Spider-Man!
So, have you guys seen this? This is they all the episodes, I think, are on the Marvel.com website, which I should put a link to in the show notes, so you can actually see this now, legally streaming and legally subtitled.
Oh, we don't like legal. That takes a bit of fun. But no, see, I feel like I've seen this at some point, and I don't know why or when.
But there were, I think I'd seen clips of it way back when, sort of vague. I think there might have been mention in, like, and like photos of it, and there was some very loose fan subs of, like, I think the first episode and maybe the second episode, sort of in the early 2000s, which I said very loose because they tended to sort of put in their own jokes and stuff.
But I've got to say, it looks pretty bizarre in the sense that the only thing that is Spider-Man like is the outfit.
It is, yes, and the giant robot.
But it's about a biker or something, isn't it?
It is, yeah. There's a crashed spaceship, an alien. So it's more, in fact, more like the Green Lantern's origin in terms of how he gets his powers, really, isn't it? With a crashed spaceship and the surviving alien giving him spider powers and a giant robot called Leopardon.
Mm-hmm. Which looks pretty badass, to be honest.
Yeah.
But the villain, Professor Monster, that's what he's called, and I think he looks like the best villain to ever grace our televisions. He looks awesome in all the best ways.
I cannot remember. He leads the Iron Cross army. I can't remember him. I remember there's a Amazoness who's the sidekick, but yeah, I can't remember what. Oh yeah, yeah, I'm now looking at pictures of Professor Monster. he is a badass. That is what a hefty cybernetic implant he's got going on there.
It looks really good as well. Not.
But yeah, but
I don't know why on all the little, on the intro, it's got, like, Spider-Man, like, clawing. Like, he's got his claws out or something. He stands, like, as if he's got claws. Watch
Maybe
it, you'll know what I mean.
To his suit.
But he's, I don't know, it just looks strange. As if he's, like, a... Just watch it, and you'll see what I mean by the claws. He's like,
it's
stands
much
like
worse than the old American Spider-Man live action.
I'd say it's better than that one.
Yeah,
Better than that one. But Yeah, it's all, but yeah, it's there and you can see it. And the apparently the deal was that Toei, however you want to pronounce it, I can never quite figure it out. They were given 3 years to do whatever they wanted with Marvel's sort of trademarks and characters, and in return, Marvel got to do the similar with some of their shows. So on Marvel's side, you got the Shogun Warriors comic, which had the robot set of Combattle of V, Dangard Ace, and Raideen appearing in, well, given completely different backgrounds and showing up in the Marvel Universe, sort of teaming up with Fantastic Four and whatnot.
Did Marvel do a good job?
I don't, I've never read them, and obviously there's, I don't think they'll ever get reprinted for copyright reasons, similar to how they, Hasbro won't let them use ROM. They won't let them reprint like the 70 issues of the ROM comic, which was this dumb robot toy, which was turned into this sort of bizarre, faintly horrific science fiction story by Bill Mantlo. They did a deal with Toho for the Godzilla. So there was, they republished the Essential Godzilla,
right,
which was Godzilla goofing around in the Marvel Universe.
Hopefully without Godzuki.
And I picked that up for £1 at an MCM Expo a few years back.
Sounds like a bargain. Can't go wrong pound with a pound, spent. Surely?
Yes, it was
worth mentioning that Spider-Man's intro is awesome.
Did you see his claws? How he, like, shows his claws?
I did. I was just blown away by the funkiness of the music.
Yeah, the music is pretty good. Yeah, he's a motocross racer is the hero. So
right.
I'm guessing that's probably that. Yeah, I think that's motocross was kind of like a 70s craze, wasn't it? I'm guessing it would be in Japan as well. So it's that sort of cashing in of that in the same way that you Marvel used to do themselves with Ghost Rider was. Cashing in on Evel Knievel, and Shang-Chi was cashing in on Bruce Lee. So you've got to cash in on whatever the latest youth craze is. Yeah, go ahead, Gary.
I was just going to say, I think from the next one on the list, Battle J Fever, I think one of the characters in that was also motocross.
Yeah, Battle J Fever is the next show they did, which was very loosely based on Captain America. And it's part of the Super Sentai shows, which would eventually lead to the American adaptation of one of them as Power Rangers, and then a lot of them as Power Rangers. and so it was at one point called the first Super Sentai show, but I think they now have decided it was the third. But it was the first one which had got a giant robot in it.
Right.
Which is, they'd got that from Leopardon appearing in the Spider-Man show. So you could say that Spider-Man is responsible for the Power Rangers.
Kamen Rider, presumably, and all the other ones.
Yeah, obviously, that was... Well, Kamen Rider came before that, but, so Spider-Man is obviously kind... The way they've done it is kind of riffing on the Kamen Rider type thing with the motorcycling and everything else, but then adding a giant robot to it, and also being Spider-Man. so Battle Fever J is... I think they're all, international... They each have, a different nationality. And the only one which survives as a Marvel Center. Name is Miss America. Is that one of them?
I was reading this just last night, and I can't remember for the life of us.
Yeah, there's two Miss Americas, and that's the only one who sort of still has a name which has been taken from a Marvel comic. Yeah, it's Battle Japan, Battle Cossack, Battle France, Battle Kenya, and Miss America.
I think this looks hilarious. I bet the acting is disgraceful in it, but it looks quite good from the intro. It's the kind of thing I'd sit down, enjoy, just for what it is. I'd probably quite appreciate it.
Wikipedia tells us that the villains are the Secret Society Egos, which is a religion of mad egocentrists who intend to plunge the world into chaos.
Scary stuff.
Yes.
Can't be any worse than Power Rangers. Let's be fair.
I used to love Power Rangers as a kid. Loved
then you
it.
Should like this.
Exactly. I mean, it looks really goofy. There's a bit in the intro, I think, where somebody walks into a lamppost, and it looks fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, I think that. I think, as I said before, I think some of them they occasionally show up in the current Super Sentai show, which is the one with the space pirates who have the powers to call on any of the previous Super Sentai character. They can turn into any of the previous ones. So that's the sort of the gimmick each episode.
So Captain Kosak could make a return.
Crossover and
yes,
melding.
I did only watch.
I remember hearing about a Power Rangers episode or a Sentai episode where every single red Power Ranger that had been in existence was all like in the one episode or something.
Yeah, I think they tend to do those for like anniversaries, which I think is why. So I think it was the 10th anniversary, from what I was reading, was when they sort of named Battle Fever J as being the first one, and then later when they wanted to do an anniversary episode a bit, little bit earlier than they wanted to, they decided two other shows came before it and they were Super Sentai shows too. yes, doesn't look like anybody's fan-subbed these at all, but...
shame.
There That's you go.
Very disappointing. What's next? Tomb of Dracula.
Yeah, this was, I don't think it was an OAV or a film.
Yeah.
It did get released in America by Harmony Gold, which was dubbed, and may have got a UK release. I know that I've seen reviews on UK sites of it, and I've got a digital copy of it, and I mean, all of it's on YouTube anyway.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to watch this. I think it looks all
it's
right.
It's quite ridiculous. And
what is it? Dracula flees to Boston, doesn't he? Or
something like that, yes. It's hard. It's hard to get through. And at one point, he loses his powers and eats a hamburger, which... there's lots of goofy stuff with Quincy Harker, who's is based on the Tomb of Dracula comics by Marv Wolfman and Gene Colan, which are great, and I recommend picking up the essentials of those because they look even better in black and white than they did in colour. Apparently, though, on the Japanese credits, they misspelt their names and they were Mary Wolfman and Jean Colan.
Oh, nobody proofread it.
Yeah. And Quincy Harker, as I mentioned, is in it, and he'll be showing up in the last show we'll talk about today as well.
Interesting.
Show up. I think he might be under a different name in it, but he's the descendant of the Harkers from the original Dracula novel. But he's like got a gimmicked wheelchair full of vampire hunting weapons inside it.
Hmm. Interesting.
And Tomb of Dracula obviously led to, I think, the characters of Blade first appeared in the comic, and some of the characters who show up in Blade 3 first appeared in Tomb of Dracula as well.
Oh, yes, I read that myself, actually. Yeah, I never seen the third Blade.
Well, yeah, you can watch it all on YouTube. It's fairly goofy. It can't quite sort of... It tries to be horrific, but then again, it's got this these strange comedy bits like Dracula eating hamburgers in Boston.
Boston. As you do.
Boston.
And the dub's not very good. Anyway, 1981, we get the first sort of proper Marvel Entertainment toy co-production, though it's only for, I think, about 4 episodes of this show. And that is Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. From what I read, they did the season 1 episode, Knights and Demons, and then they did all of season 2. Unfortunately, all of season 2 was all of 3 episodes.
Oh, wow.
Which were basically origin episodes for Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. So did either of you two watch these as kids?
I didn't watch it as a child.
I don't think I did. I think all the Spider-Man cartoons I watched, he was very much on his own.
Yeah, I don't like any of his friends. I don't like Iceman.
Or Firestar.
Or Firestar, really. So not too amazing friends.
Yeah, because there was another Spider-Man show Marvel had also made in 1981, which was just him. Not sure what studio was animating that, if it was an outsourced one at all. And that one was more like a traditional Spider-Man show with Spider-Man villains showing up. Whereas this one, I think, had sort of more odd things, sort of new characters to the show, and let's look at some of these villains. I'm looking at the
cast. Was Firestar new? Because I don't remember her.
I think she was new in the TV series, and then they brought her into the comics. She got like a mini series where her villain was the White Queen from X-Men.
Fair enough.
And
I like the fact that their base was very Batcave-y.
Yeah, in Aunt May's house or something, wasn't it? Or was it like
flicker switch, computers pop out everywhere.
Yes.
Like the old Batman.
Yeah, so the second season is sort of the most, is the toy one, and see, the site spiderfriends.com describes it as being tall, they had taller and more heroic figures, and yeah, so the episode of Origin of Iceman, where you get a flashback to him with the X-Men.
I never did like Iceman at all. I don't know why.
But... I don't know who. Well, he had a really... it's Frank Welker doing the voice in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And right. His voice is like... It's like his... No, it's not whiny. It's like his Freddy voice from Scooby-Doo, but with the smarm turned up even further. Nice. I mean, Frank Welker's a great voice actor, but yeah, his Iceman voice is like... I just want to punch the guy. But they just have the amazing in the Firestar is Born, which also has the X-Men show up in it, the modern day X-Men, where Firestar explains her origin and that's like a X-Men reunion, and where you meet Storm and Wolverine, and Wolverine has the most ridiculous accent.
What kind of accent?
Well, the guy who voiced him was born in England, raised in Canada, and then moved to America when he was 12.
Oh, goodness.
But somehow, Wolverine's supposed to be Canadian. Somehow he sounds Australian in the cast.
Well, awesome. Hugh Jackman's Australian.
So they maybe it might be precognitive.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they retconned it somehow.
But, I'm reading here as well, IGN named Spider-Man and His Not-So-Amazing Friends as the 59th best top 100 animated TV shows.
I mean, I liked it as a kid.
Of what, 1981?
Of all time. Of all time, apparently.
I will say I did like it a lot as a kid. Though I think I did prefer the one without the Amazing Friends in it. But I did like the fact that the X-Men showed up, because...
You do like X-Men.
Well, the thing was, you kind of... In the UK, I don't think there was ever sort of a comic which had the X-Men in it per se until Secret Wars 2 was serialised. But they'd occasionally show up in other Marvel comics coming out here, at least what I was reading, and sort of you'd see adverts for like the TSR Marvel role-playing game. And so you'd see pictures of Wolverine, and when you're a kid, you're like, just seeing a picture of Wolverine is like, that's the coolest superhero ever. He's got claws.
Exactly.
He looks
everybody
like,
loves Wolverine. Everybody.
It's like, well, you say that people pretend they don't like him.
But people try to pretend, but you can
see. Yeah, I think they really do.
False facade.
There's not really much to dislike about Wolverine, really.
No, he smokes cigars, for a start.
Well, he's not allowed to anymore. He's not allowed to smoke in Marvel Comics anymore.
Boo.
Got to set a good example while you're slicing people.
I'm surprised Fantastic Four cartoon's not on this list.
That one wasn't one of the ones which had a Japanese...
Shame. I thought the Japanese influence may have explained why they had Robbie the Robot instead of the Human Torch.
Oh, well, that was because the Human Torch had been licensed. He was being developed for a live-action show, I think, possibly at the time, or maybe his own cartoon show. It was always rumoured when I was a kid that they were taking him out because they didn't want kids setting him on fire, but
that was... Yeah, for kids set themselves on fire, look Mum, I'm the Human Torch.
Yeah,
kids on that, actually kids are that stupid,
but that was like the urban legend about why that Herbie was in
I think the urban legend I heard was that it was too difficult to animate fire back when they did that cartoon, which was why they did Robbie the Robot.
But no, he'd been under development for another TV project, so they couldn't use him in that. It's kind of like how they couldn't use Blue Beetle in the Justice League cartoon, because there was a project attached to that character at the time.
Higher engagements.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the situation there. But yeah, so I was trying to think why I quite liked Amazing Spider-Man. I think it's because you had X-Men showed up. There's one where Captain America, Submariner, Doctor Strange.
Amazing Spider-Man the other one at the same time? Did you say?
I think it might have just been called Spider-Man.
Right.
I know the classic Spider-Man music.
Yeah, it's just called Spider-Man, I think, because... Oh, no, that was from the 60s. The classic Spider-Man music was...
Did they not keep using it? I thought they did.
I can't remember. I know the Clear Vision have got... Well, they've they've kind of got the rights at the moment. I assume they have, but I notice everything's slashed in price on their website. So it's possible that Disney are probably going to take, once that license runs out, I imagine they might take it back in-house like they're doing with lots of other things. But they've got Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends on DVD. I think they're like $5.99 a volume at the moment. But they've also got the one which came out the same time, which was just Spider-Man, and they've had to call that Spider-Man 5000 for some reason. I don't know.
Terrible name.
I already read that this past week, looking up stuff for this episode. But that's to distinguish it from the, I think, the 94 series.
Ah, right.
Which we'll get onto later, which I think they're just calling Spider-Man, which is the one, I imagine, most... we've all seen, and lots of people remember us sort of being their favourite Spider-Man show.
Shh, don't spoil it. We'll get to that later.
Spider-Man's Amazing Friends, it's kind of like Marvel Team Up, the comic, but not as good because you're stuck with Firestar and Iceman each week rather than a different superhero. But yeah, the good thing is when I was a kid, you got to see all these other superheroes. So there's Captain America. I see there's another one with, who else turns up? Incredible Hulk shows up in one episode, Thor and Loki show up. Red Skull shows up. But then they've also got these characters. Video Man is one they've made up themselves, I think, for the show. I think Dracula even shows up, apparently. Right, next up on the list.
Love this.
1983, at the height of the craze for this particular franchise, was Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes. Love this. I didn't realise it had got a DVD release. I'm actually bidding for it on eBay at the moment. So I'm hoping to God I get it. Oh, this is fantastic.
Yeah, for those who've never seen this, perhaps because you're too young, it was a show about six kids who go to a theme park. They see a Dungeons & Dragons ride, and something goes drastically wrong with the ride, and they find themselves in the realm of Dungeons & Dragons.
Fantastic.
Each with like a character class, a ranger, barbarian,
thief,
wizard, cavalier,
thief,
acrobat, that's the one,
yes. Which basically sort of boils down to one magic item each.
Mm.
Yeah.
So the ranger has got this bow which fires flaming arrows. Wizard's got this hat which can pull things out of, which is never quite what he wants. Barbarian's got this magic rock club. Thief's got this cloak which turns her invisible. Acrobat's got, extending staff she has?
Yeah, staff.
Cavalier's
got a shield.
A shield, which I'm not sure it has.
Do anything, block anything.
I think it does actually block pretty much anything.
Yes.
He kind of hates using it, but I think.
And we should also point out, he's also Ralph Mouth from Happy Days.
I did not know that.
It's Donny Most. he did the Eric the Cavalier, but yeah, he's the cowardly one. And I'll post a link, but there's an article, Mark Avanier, who worked on the show, did a column on it, and the point is that their instructions for writing was that it was to encourage sort of community, and so the complainer had to always be wrong. Which was the way he was. Well, yeah, he comments about how sort of that's not really that good a lesson to teach kids.
No.
It's not one to teach them constantly every episode.
See, I'm kind of worried about rewatching this because I really, really love this. And if I get the DVD and it ruins my childhood, I'll not be impressed. But we'll see. Has anyone watched it since? Or
I've not
recently ish.
No, the thing I remember is I liked the villains more than the heroes.
I seem to remember that I liked the dragon Tiamat a hell of a lot more than Venger. I used to find Venger was somewhat scary, but whenever Tiamat appeared, it was like the characters really looked like they were in shit street.
Tiamat was a multi-headed, multicolored dragon, for those people who've not seen it or not familiar with the mythology.
Vocal effects provided by Frank Welker.
Wasn't Tiamat the only thing that could actually stop Venger?
I think that's right. Yeah, I think that was what he was scared of, was Tiamat.
Yeah, that was the only thing he was scared of. Because I remember they used to use that as a kind of reoccurring plot element.
The scare.
Kind of bring the two evil beasts together and then let them fight, kind of thing.
But yeah, this was sort of the height of the D&D craze, as it was then. Because I was looking, sort of 1983, they were releasing toys, which came out sort of alongside the cartoon, but they didn't really reflect what was in the cartoon, which was a bit odd. They were more sort of just general Dungeons and Dragons toys.
I was going to say, I don't think I ever saw those.
I think some things showed up in the cartoon. They were really well designed, but I had one, and my brother had one, and they weren't very well constructed, let's say. Both of them had arms which fell off, because they were like plastic arms, and their joints were like a metal hook, which went into like an elastic band, which stretched across the inside the torso to the other arm. So as soon as that elastic
recipe for breaking,
yeah, as soon as that elastic band went, yeah, your arms are falling off, mate. So there's even TV. If you look on YouTube, there's even TV adverts for not just Dungeons and Dragons role playing games, but other role playing games like Star Frontiers. They were appearing in like supermarket catalogs alongside Risk and things. So it was the time we released the classic red box basic set of Dungeons & Dragons, which I think lots of people from that time will remember. And what else was happening? Sort of the world of interactive fantasy. The game Wizardry was released, and the guy who wrote that would go on to found the Anime Ego label and release Urusei Yatsura, amongst other things. And also, it was the first full year in the UK, on the UK side of things, that you had the Final Fantasy novels. The first one came out in 82, but 83 was the year, the first full year of Final Fantasy releases. Not Final Fantasy, Fighting Fantasy.
Hmm.
That's what I'm thinking of, not Final.
Who was your favourite character from Dungeons & Dragons?
It was probably the Cavalier, Eric the Cavalier, the complainer who was always wrong. Partly because he was voiced by Ralph Malph.
Mm. And you, is yours the dragon, Gary?
Tiamat was pretty awesome, but basically anyone except that stupid unicorn that I wanted to throttle.
There was Uni the unicorn, yes. And Dungeons.
That thing needed to die. Why the hell they looked after it, I don't know.
It was
Bobby's pet. It was Bobby's. Yes.
And because it was defenseless, but it was its horn magical?
No, I didn't know.
I'm sure there was some import for them to have it.
I'm sure there was probably an episode where Uni actually proved of some use to them, and then they kind of justified keeping it because of that. But
she has the ability to speak, so
what? that's about it. So ask you, who is your favorite
Presto
character?
Presto, without a doubt, the magician.
With his dodgy hat.
With his dodgy wizard sleeve that he could always... Well, hat, obviously, yeah.
I like the comment, the top comment on YouTube for the intro that for this cartoon just basically says, these guys don't have a cleric, they're screwed. Was the lack of a healer an oversight on the developer's part?
Well, they never really got injured, though, did they?
This is true. You can't really have that in a kid's cartoon.
The Cavalier protected them.
Definitely not an 80s cartoon, at least.
No. Cavalier protected them with his epic shield.
Yeah, so no need for any.
And am I correct that much like our beloved Jason the World Warriors and so many other shows of its era, Dungeons and Dragons didn't get finished, so you never got to see them go home?
I don't know, but...
No, it never got finished. Well, it finished in that it ended, but there's no ending. One of the writers has written an ending, which you can find in script form.
I'm going to find that as soon as I rinse through the series. If I win the DVD, of course.
So is there any other games you'd like to see get a cartoon?
That's a good question.
Obviously, they're sort of moving into board games and games.
Yeah. Cluedo.
HeroQuest and Space Crusaders cartoons would be good fun.
Yes, yeah, they were sort of very much more British, weren't they? Particularly, it's obviously Space Crusade, where it's just blatantly Warhammer 40,000.
Ripped off.
Well, not ripped off, because it was Games Workshop designing it as well. But
okay, so yeah. It was allowed.
Yes.
Do we have to choose a board game?
Or well, any, sort of, any sort of game, because they've what they did, they're doing, aren't they doing a Monopoly film at the moment and a Battleships really? Film?
Oh, crazy.
A Monopoly film?
Yeah, well, hang on. It's Ridley Scott's doing one of them. Ridley Scott board game.
A Monopoly film just sounds like it'd be, I don't know, like the film Wall Street or something.
Yeah, yeah. Ridley Scott's making the Monopoly movie, which will, yes, may well just be about Wall Street, because it just says it will be all about greed.
Oh, dear.
I reckon Cluedo would make a good series.
Well,
they did a TV show of that.
They did. Really? It was a quiz type thing.
Who Done It TV show. I used to love that when I was younger. It was really good.
Yeah, and there is a film called Clue, which is the American name for Cluedo, with Tim Curry.
Oh, well, there we go. It's already been done.
Yeah,
dreams,
so
dreams around.
I recommend checking that out. I think you might like that, Askew. Mm. It's not a super great film, but it's got lots of decent comedic performances.
Oh, I'll check that out.
And it had the gimmick of having three different endings in the cinema. So
ooh.
At each screening, you might not necessarily get the same ending. But on the DVD, they show all three in the row.
Oh, I'll definitely check that out. Sounds good.
Right, next up is the Charmkins, which apparently was just a one-off special. And this is very 80s, if even more 80s than Dungeons and Dragons cartoon. It was a cartoon based on scented jewelry playmates, whatever they may be. But yeah, I was thinking there was an obsession. I don't know whether you remember this, Gary. Askew might be a bit too young. An 80s obsession with scented toys. Because you had all the shortcake line, didn't you?
I think that rings a bell, actually, because a lot of toys had a weird smell to them.
Yeah. But yeah, there was obviously the strawberry shortcake line was also scented, like dolls, weren't they? Depending on what sort of cake they were supposed to be based on. And then there was scratch and sniff stickers.
I remember the scratch and sniff stickers.
And then you get like scented erasers and things like that.
No,
so
you'd God.
Like, so you might get a razor in the shape of a strawberry and it would smell like strawberry if strawberry was some sort of chemical.
Yeah, like an artificial one.
I do wonder if sniffing all that strange chemicals was good for us, or at least good for me as a child.
Oh, that's why they've never been reinvented.
Well, I don't know. We're not kids, are we? Maybe kids may still be getting scented toys, but that was definitely a thing in the 80s. And obviously enough of a thing for somebody to make a one-off special about the Charmkins. I'll stick a link to some of that on in the show notes.
I watched a little bit of this actually on YouTube, and I don't know whether he was a villain or what, but he had like two heavies with him, like his, like, what do you call them, like cohorts, you know, like these two goofy fellas.
I didn't see that.
They look like the highlight of the show, and that's saying something.
What would you imagine they scent, that their scent is?
Scrap yards and compost heaps. I wouldn't like to hazard a guess.
The villain seems very Gargamel-like from the Smurfs.
Well, yeah, the Smurfs cartoon was around this time as well, I think, so that might have been another thing. They might have been looking for Smurfs.
When I first saw this, I thought it looked very similar to, like, the Cabbage Patch dolls, which I think were around the same sort of time, weren't they?
Yeah, I think so. Let me just check what time they came around. I think they had a cartoon as well, didn't they? Cabbage Patch dolls... But yeah, they were a huge craze. I don't know whether I think almost like I think they had, because obviously we didn't talk about it in the D&D, was sort of the D&D went from a craze to a scare. What is this dangerous game your kids are playing?
Oh, what?
To Satanists.
Yeah, like playing D&D was like playing with an Ouija board or something.
Yeah. Oh. Another film for you to watch, Askew, is Mazes and Monsters. I think that's the one with an early Tom Hanks film about people playing role-playing games who go mad.
Oh, sounds awesome already.
If you search for it, the first YouTube link is Mazes and Monsters Tom Hanks Freaks Out.
I don't want to spoil it, but...
but yeah, I'm sure there was something similar, like some similar sort of scare about Cabbage Patch Kids when they first came out. Not turning them into Satanists, but there was obviously some... Yeah, the dolls came out in 1978... And I don't know when the cartoon, but obviously, yeah, so obviously it was
popular around the same sort of time.
Popular around the same sort of time. Yeah, they're sort of Charmkins. They're not appallingly designed. They're sort of big round heads on little bodies. And sort of wearing old styly sort of... They look like they're dressed out of Little House on the Prairie or something.
I think this is what... Actually, no, it's not the worst one on the list. There's worse coming right, up. But.
Next up from 1984 is a feature film Marvel and Toy worked on together, which is Gallivants, which I knew nothing about until looking up this list. It is a movie about ants.
I'm sure this has seen TV time at some point or another, because it looks scarily familiar.
I think it looks scary in general.
I just remember the males having the blue arms and then the females having the stripy kind of thing instead.
Yeah,
I
just looks
remember
so
looking
strange.
At it thinking, why the hell are they coloured like that? Ants aren't even that colour.
Maybe they couldn't draw like a female face or something, so thought, right, we need something to distinguish.
Make them all the same.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the ants in Bug's Life were blue, they weren't they? So.
Oh, yes. Maybe a little true. Nod to
maybe,
this.
Maybe that is just how ants see each other ants. They might have with their ant eyes, they see them in different colours.
This looks terrible. It's about an ant child who goes to ant school who wants to learn how to become an adult ant. And he believes... No, sorry. That's what they learn in the school. And he believes he doesn't need these lessons. And obviously trouble ensues in the set in Gantville.
Alrighty ho. So you could watch triple bill of this and Ants and Bug's Life if you wanted to watch a lot of movies about ants.
That sounds like a good night.
Sounds painful if you ask me.
I hated ants. Never did like ants.
I didn't watch it, nor did I watch Bug's Life. I kind of grown out of that sort of thing.
Oh, with the... Which one was... Actually, I think I preferred Ants to a Bug's Life.
Because Stallone was in it.
There was one that I preferred, I can't remember
Ants
what.
Is the one with Woody Allen.
I probably and preferred that one.
Which Bugs one had Life, Stallone in it?
That's Ants as well. Bug's Life is the one with... Is the Pixar one with Dave Foley.
I was very young when I seen A Bug's Life, but I'm sure Ants is the better one.
I don't know, I prefer the look. I've not watched all of Ants because I didn't like the character design. I quite like Bug's Life.
I've not seen either.
The grasshoppers were cool in A Bug's Life.
Yes. Bug's Life is basically Seven Samurai or Magnificent Seven.
Oh, see, I've never thought of it as that. Oh, that's a whole new dimension on my...
Except the people who, the Seven Samurai, don't realise that they are. So in that way, it's a bit like Three Amigos as well, because... He's sent out, isn't he, to find somebody to protect the ant's nest from the grasshoppers.
Yes. I'm going to have to rewatch this in a whole new light. it'll return as my second favourite film to Seven Samurai.
What's your first favourite film?
Seven Samurai, probably, or Blade Runner, perhaps.
I thought you were going to say The Charmed Kings. Samurai.
No, that's third favourite.
What are the films about ants out there? Is it Them, the ones with the giant ants?
Oh, God only knows.
Them, what, the old 60s B-movie or 70s B-movie?
Something like that, yes.
Oh, I love that film. It's so cheesy. It's awesome.
Yeah, Them, 1954.
Classic. Yeah.
That's earliest really atomic...
You should watch that, Ashley. You should definitely watch Them.
Them.
It's cheesy propped kind of monsters, but it's all good.
Yeah, the earliest atomic tests in New Mexico caused common ants to mutate into giant man-eating monsters that threaten civilization.
Glorious, 1954.
Yeah, Them is awesome. Seen TV time a fair bit on, like, I think Turner Classic Movies or the Sky Movie Classic Channel or whatever.
Righty-ho.
Oh, I'm very disappointed. I thought Edgar Wright was doing a remake of it, but it's apparently a different Them, unfortunately. Mm. Oh, disappointing.
Well, I'm looking on IMDb, and Gallivants is currently the seventh top ant film on IMDb.
I didn't think there'd be a top ant film. What's the first?
I didn't know there was seven ant films.
Oh, there's more than seven. There's 75.
Jesus!
Blimey.
Now, how much of those feature ants to... I mean, some of these are pretty much of a stretch to call
What, like an film. Ant walked past the camera lens or something?
They've got Grave of the Fireflies at number four as the fourth best Ant film.
What's number one? Well, give us a rundown of the top three, then.
Okay. Number one is The Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Mm.
Number two is Old Boy. Number three is Umberto D. Number four is Grave of the Fireflies. Number five is Andrei Rublev. Next is... Oh, blimey. I'm getting into difficult-to-pronounce words here. Let me see if there's an English name for this one. Yes, there is. Ashes and Diamonds. Number seven...
Feature ants.
Yeah, apparently so, according to the IMDb keywords. hang on, I'll do another one in a minute. But number seven is Gallivants.
Woo!
Number eight is Walkabout. Number nine is Picnic at Hanging Rock. And number ten is Jungle Book.
Oh, what?
I don't remember any ants in Jungle
Book. I don't remember any ants at all.
I'm sure there is, yeah, because isn't that in one of the songs that Baloo sings?
Maybe.
Possibly.
I think he goes, they look down onto the ground and watch some ants doing something.
Oh, okay. Dance probably in good Jungle Book fashion.
But here we go. Seven best ant/ant attack movies, though. These might be more your... Is Them at number one?
Of course.
The Naked Jungle, 1954.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
The Leinigen South American cocoa plantation is threatened by a 2-mile-wide, 20-mile-long column of army ants.
Wow.
Number three, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Oh, God!
Number four, Phase 4 from 1974. Desert ants suddenly form a collective intelligence and begin to wage war on the desert inhabitants.
Nice.
That sounds good.
Number five, The Ant Bully. After Lucas Nickel floods an ant colony... With his water gun, he's magically shrunken down to insect size and sentenced to hard labour in the ruins.
Got it.
That's a recent CG one. Which I don't think did all that well. Empire of the Ants at number six. Sleazy scam artist Joan Collins tries to sell phony real estate deals down in the Florida Everglades. That, is, I believe, is a really bizarre movie. Because
it
has giant ants in it. But obviously from that brief synopsis, there's no mention of giant ants in it.
Not at all.
Here we go.
Maybe she's selling real estate for places that...
Well, here we go, yes. What she and her unsuspecting buyers don't know is that the area has been taken over by giant ants. And finally, something called Hate Man from 1989, of which there is only 13 reviews, 13 votes rather. There is no synopsis and it has 2 out of 10.
That sounds awesome.
That sounds like one that's worth tracking down.
It does. But where's Gallivants in this list?
Well, that's not an ant attack movie.
Ant attack. Fair enough.
Yeah,
I'll let it off then.
Do you want to know some of the keywords about Gallivants? Or see if there's any more ant-related keywords in there.
Do you remember the cartoon called Ataman?
I do, yes.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yes, and my favourite ant-related thing is... the end of one of the episodes of Look Around You, where they go, thanks, ants. Thants. It's my favourite ants thing.
Good pun, I like it. I don't think I have a favourite ant-related media piece. Probably not.
We've given you some tips, you can get...
Yeah, definitely. I'll have one by the end of the week.
Excellent. we could probably do an all-ant episode. Okay, right, moving on to Transformers 1984.
What's this? Never heard of it.
So, Transformers. Yeah, well, if you want a lot of detail on Transformers, I refer you to the rest of the internet.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this that show that kind of ripped off GoBots?
It is, yes. I think this was shown on Wackaday or Wide Awake Club. I know GoBots was. Timmy Mallett had his GoBots GoBotty thing he used to say before they started. Or maybe during the middle of the episode. But I think they showed Transformers as well. I think they showed some of the other upcoming shows.
Then they showed both, because I remember having arguments at school over which was better.
Yes, that sounds likely. Did you have many Transformers as a kid? The toys?
Not one.
Yeah, loads. It's like, it was something I was always into as a kid. Hence why it's probably still one of my all-time favourite cartoons. Ranks up there with Jace, but unlike Jace, it had toys, which made it better. Nothing better than watching a cartoon where you'd see something in an episode and think, oh wow, I've got the toy of that.
Did you ever recreate scenes? Did you recreate scenes?
Yeah, all the time. I remember that me and my friends had this reoccurring theme where we all hated Starscream, and I think I don't know anybody that had a Starscream toy that wasn't broken. my Starscream crashed a lot because I think he got picked on a bit.
Poor Starscream.
Yeah.
I only had a few. I think I had one from like the first wave of releases, which was not Starscream, but one of the other ones who used the same mold.
Thundercracker or
which one's the purple? Which one's the purple and black one?
Pass. You got purple and black and blue and black. One's Thundercracker, one's Skywarp, but I forget which is which.
Yeah, it was one of them.
Clearly not quite a big enough Transformers fan.
No.
Yeah. He's a fraud.
And then I think I had a few of the mini ones, the smaller ones, like Bumblebee and Cliffjumper.
Did you have Warpath, the little tank?
No, I didn't. I think I had. I know we had Cliffjumper and
Hopper. He was little.
Maybe, and then like one was like a little orange truck. It was really weird having like trucks. That in
sounds
that
like
size. Hopper. Because, and then obviously you've got Optimus Prime, who's also a truck, but he's like three times the size.
Yeah, randomly.
And then I had one of the insect Decepticons, Insecticons, in fact. One of the Beetles. I can't remember what he was called either. But yeah, not too many Transformers. There's a show we'll be talking about later, which I had many more of the toys of. But yeah, the comics though, I had loads and loads of the comics. And this was a thing about Marvel and Hasbro, because obviously Transformers, I think, is the first one they're producing with Hasbro as Sunbow. So it's you'd see Marvel and Sunbow come up on like the end credits of these shows. And Marvel had basically, so Sunbow had outsourced to Marvel, and then so they're using like Marvel writers and like Marvel Productions sort of layouts and design teams, and then they were in turn outsourcing to Toei for the actual animation. And so you got, I don't know whether we saw, I think we might have seen it a bit for Transformers, definitely saw it in the US though, is where you'd, as well as adverts for the toys using the animation, you'd also get adverts for the comic using the animation from the cartoon.
Yeah, that sounds quite right about right, actually.
So it was like this one glorious whole mass of cross-advertising for everything. It was like, watch the cartoon, buy the comic, buy the toys. Watch the cartoon, buy the comic, buy the toys.
when you bought the Transformers, obviously back then on VHS tape, I remember watching the VHS tapes, and at the end of that, there'd be all the adverts for the toys and the comics, and there was like a mail away club you could join where I think you paid God knows how much for the year and maybe got a sticker if you were lucky, or something equally naff.
Yeah. I mean, the one, it was like, I know the toy, at least everybody wanted when I was a kid with the Dinobots.
Yeah, the Dinobots
were some of those were hard to get.
Well,
why did everybody want the Dinobots?
Swoop didn't come out in Europe at all, the pterodactyl one. You couldn't get him.
I mean, that was the other thing, because these things were so popular, is that you'd get toy shops importing the Japanese toys before the official Hasbro release, so you could sell them
extortionate prices, yes. I'd imagine.
Well, they did toys that didn't even appear in the cartoon, like the Sharktacons. What were they? The ones that were all made out of sea creatures, and they combined together to make a giant sea creature.
I don't remember that
one. Piranacons, I think they were, but they were like, again, they weren't even in the TV show, or at least they hadn't been at that point, so they were probably imports.
Yeah, apparently that was that I was reading, that was the problem they'd run into on Transformers, and they'd kill off a character and then they'd have to bring him back in the next episode because Hasbro hadn't actually released the toy yet.
Totally
hence
crazy.
Constantly resurrecting Optimus just Prime.
I think it might have been Jetfire that happened to, which was the one, wasn't that the one which was based on the Valkyrie from Macross?
Yeah, that it was like the, so it was almost identical in design, I remember.
Yeah, he was the one which was bigger than all the other ones.
Yeah, and he was...
The toy was from a different scale.
The story was kind of like he was thawed out, and originally he'd been a friend of Starscream, so he was asked to join the Decepticons, and then he realised that he didn't really like them, so kind of switched sides.
But yeah, he was... Yeah, he was another one where it was like, oh, he's the one you want to get, which obviously I never got.
Yeah, he was huge.
A friend had one, and we eventually dug him out in our teens for playing Warhammer 40k. We used him as a giant robot in that.
Awesome.
How big was it?
It was kid huge. It was really big.
Yeah, I remember Ultra Magnus was also pretty big when you put him in robot form.
Yeah, I think what we did for that 40k thing is we started him up, and he was one army, and then... He on his own, he was one army, and then another army fought it on its own.
But yeah, I had I had like a whole range of toys. The one, the toy that I wanted never had was the. Do you remember the toy of Scorponok, the Decepticons like super base at the end?
Yeah,
and that thing was huge.
Like, so how big are we talking here? Like, big for a kid, or like?
Yeah, like.
A large dog or something? I don't know.
I think if you stood Scorponok up in robot form, he'd be as tall as a toddler. Quite easily, I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
It was pretty big, but yeah, we'll have to get some pictures, size comparisons. But sadly, I don't have any of my Transformers left now. The only ones I've got is Optimus Prime and Grimlock, who was the leader of the Dinobots.
I bet some of them are worth a fortune now. Absolutely. Well, then again, was it oversaturated?
They were, but then they did oversaturate because Hasbro now have re-released all of the original Gen 1 Transformers from 1984 onwards have all been re-released in big new boxes, and Forbidden Planet sells them at like 50-odd quid or whatever it is.
The original toy or the like reinvented?
The original toy, but re-released in a new box.
That's pretty good.
But as it was from, like, back then. The only thing they've changed is some of the branding's a bit different, which you wouldn't really know unless you was really into Transformers. Like, Jazz had, like, a load of Martini branding on him because he was a Porsche, and obviously they couldn't put that on the re-release toy, so they changed it to something a bit more generic. But yeah, you can buy the old kind of 1980s originals, which are probably falling to bits now, but you can buy the remakes if you want to have like a display.
Yeah.
And the remakes aren't that, look identical, but are a lot cheaper, and they're still official.
And then in 1986, we got Transformers the Movie, which I think played in the cinemas in the UK. I seem to remember seeing posters for
it. Yeah, it did. I never got to see it, though, tragically.
No, I didn't see it till rented out on VHS a few years later.
Yeah, same.
Which I was probably, at which point, I think my Transformers interest had probably passed.
I've got a confession to make about this film. I'd never seen it until about... Actually, shall I keep the story for a little? Actually, it's not even that good of a story, I'll tell it.
Well, you won't tell it now, because I'm not going to...
We'll cover Transformers all in one batch.
Yeah, go on then. Basically, I hadn't watched it, and everybody goes on, oh, it's fantastic, blah, blah, blah. Finally watched it. It was really underwhelming.
It's not
as good as people say it is.
It's overhyped. That's the thing, though. It's kind of... if you'd have seen it back when it first came out as a kid, you'd have loved
it. Oh, yes, I'm sure it would have been fun. Yeah, definitely.
Watch it now, and, well, it's just kind of... It's kind of, let's kill off a load of old Transformers, bring in a load of new ones so we can sell a load of new toys.
I do love some of the voice talent, like Orson Welles as...
Yeah, Orson Welles is good. Yeah. And Leonard Nimoy.
Eric Idle. But no, that was very...
Eric Idle, I think, probably my favourite is the Junkion.
Mm. Yeah, and in the UK comics, though, at the same time, we also had some like really good stories coming off that film that Simon Furman was writing. Jeff Senior was drawing, which introduced Death's Head, who they carefully... did like a preview comic to make sure, because normally any character who first appeared in the Transformers comic belonged to Hasbro.
Right.
So what they did with that character to make sure it belonged to Marvel is they like did a one-page comic which they printed in something else which wasn't Transformers to make sure the Death's Head belonged to Marvel.
Such a cop-out. Well, not a cop-out, but just silly.
That probably explains why I never saw that character in the animated series.
Yeah, exactly. But he is a great character. They brought him back recently in Sword in Marvel, the sort of the classic version of him.
What's he look like? I have no idea what he is.
He's like a robot with, I think he has horns. He's got like a big, well, I'll jabber you a picture of him.
I was going to say, what's he called? You find it.
Death's Head.
Sounds awesome. Epic
there
name.
There we go. It's a nice big picture of him. Okay, here we go. But yeah, he was more like one of my favourite comics characters when I was about 11.
So he was your favourite Transformer. Ask you, who was yours?
See, I think it's a hard choice because I don't want to take the easy route out and say Optimus Prime.
But he was pretty damn awesome.
He was pretty damn awesome, but also like Megatron because he could turn into a gun. That's quite a cool thing to do.
Yeah, but then he was reliant upon Starscream using him, and Starscream could never shoot straight.
This guy's a badass. Death's Head. Oh my god, he looks awesome. I suppose he's not a true transformer. Does he transform?
No, he doesn't transform. He's just a really big robot who eventually gets shrunk. He showed up in Doctor Who as well. He's made his way all around the place.
Hmm. Pretty badass, but I quite like Grimlock.
Yeah, Grimlock's awesome. He's probably my favourite.
Yeah, I'd say when I was reading the actual Transformer, Grimlock was probably.
He's pretty good. What about you, Gary?
Hard one. As a kid, I was a huge fan of Optimus Prime, and then I really liked Jazz for the longest time, but I also had a soft spot for Grimlock, so. I don't know, one of those three.
and you stick with Grimlock?
I thought Jazz was the coolest. Optimus Prime was like the kind of the hero leader type, so everyone loved him. Yeah, and obviously he was the one that stood up to Megatron all the time. Yeah. Grimlock you just liked because he was dumb, but he was uber in a fight. And Jazz just had the coolest vehicle I liked the Porsche style that he was out of all of the vehicle toys, so... And the fact that he attacked people by using a set of speakers just cranks up some loud hip-hop and that knocks out Decepticons. I think it's pretty ingenious.
Do you reckon Michael Bay does the franchise justice or not?
Well, he killed Jazz, didn't he, in the first film?
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, well, fair enough. What about you, Brian?
I've not watched any of the... Michael Bay Transformers films.
It's probably good that you don't. If you,
I don't like Michael Bay films.
I watched them and they were tolerable, but it kind of the humans kind of took way too much of the forefront. It was almost like the Transformers were just a backdrop for the whole Shia LaBeouf Megan Fox love story. Killing Jazz in the first film wasn't good, and then doing some sort of big reveal in the second film that actually Megatron isn't the leader of the Decepticons. I can imagine any fan of the old Transformers sitting there going, what is this? Because it's just a bit nonsensey, but what can you do?
Moving on.
It got a new wave of kids into Transformers, so yeah. I suppose that's kind of a good thing.
Moving on, though. Talking of things which are going to get a new wave, it is Muppet Babies.
Oh, God, I loved the Muppets, but I could not stand Muppet Babies. I don't know why. It just irked me.
Yeah, so Muppet Babies, for those who have not seen it, it's a spin-off from Muppets Take Manhattan film. There's a sequence in that which is done where you see the Muppets as babies, but as puppets rather than cartoons as they are here.
Yeah.
And it kind of it's basically, who is it? It's Kermit, Miss Piggy, Fozzie, Rolf, Gonzo, Scooter, and then there's a new one. He's like a female version of Scooter.
Yeah,
just
what was
for the
her
cartoon.
Name?
Hold on, bear with
Animal
me.
Was in it as well.
Animal, yeah.
I think I remember turning this over when this used to be on.
It was pretty dire from my memory.
Occasionally,
I don't know what it was. I didn't really like it.
Yeah, occasionally Beaker and Bunsen would show up.
Did you like this, Brian?
Skeeter. Skeeter is the female version of Scooter.
Obviously.
I thought it was okay. I had no problems with it at all, really. It was...
Wasn't it like they were solving crimes or solving mysteries and stuff?
No, nothing like that at all.
Was it not?
No.
I thought it was, but it was like the whole thing was being done in their head sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, it was all done in their head. So it was like basically each episode would be some sort of different separate adventure, and they'd be going in their heads, and they used loads of archive footage, often from Lucasfilms footage. So Star Wars clips would show up, Indiana Jones clips would show up.
I don't know what I didn't like about it, because obviously I was very young at the time, but I just remember turning it over. It was probably her, but I mean, Kermit looked really cute in the sailor outfit.
My memory is she was too prominent in the show, which irked the hell out of me.
Baby Piggy, yes. Well, yeah, because it was a woman doing Baby Piggy's voice rather than Frank Oz, I think, does it normally. And obviously, and then they had like this nanny character you only saw the legs of.
Very yeah. Tom and Jerry.
Yes. But no, I quite liked it at the time. What I didn't like is the fact that everybody else then thought, the success of Muppet Babies, let's do our own shows like this.
Wasn't there Tom and Jerry Kids?
Yes. There was a Scooby-Doo one as well, which was horrible. And then you'd also get things where it would be a character and son, so you had Popeye and son.
I think there's James Bond Jr.
James Bond, yeah, that's one as well, yeah. There's Pink Panther and Sons.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
I hadn't either, so I saw it on Saturday.
I was going to say, I'd never heard of that. I heard of Popeye and Son, that was pretty terrible.
That was pretty terrible. Cause
I've never seen that. Never
Popeye
seen
and
that.
Olive have got married and they've had this kid who's like this hip, young version of Popeye.
That sounds awful. I used to love Popeye as well. That's such a good way to ruin it.
And Bluto conveniently had a kid that looked exactly like him.
Yes.
That was the same age as Popeye's kid. It was terrible.
Was Olive the mother of that one as well?
She was probably the mother of both, but they never actually revealed that in the...
and then they parodied it in X-Men comics with the X-Babies, where the evil extra-dimensional... TV executive Mojo made his own version of the X-Men, who were kid like little super deformed versions of them.
Did you say that was a parody?
That was a parody. Yes.
Oh, good, good.
Yes, it was a parody of the, because they'd always end up getting killed because they were like replaceable. I had no problems with Muppet Babies. Have you two seen the trailers for the new Muppet movie?
I haven't yet.
I haven't actually. How's it looking?
Better than Tintin?
Oh yeah, a lot better than Tintin. they look very good. The first ones, if you look for a trailer called Green with Envy, because it's like done up as if it's not a Muppet film until the spoiler alert, halfway through the trailer, Muppet
stuff. I'll check it out after recording this.
Yes, but it looks really good. It's directed by the guy who directed Flight of the Conchords, and Brett from the Flight of the Conchords is doing the music, and it's Jason Segel from Seagull, I never quite pronounce his name, from Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, if only it was Steven Seagal.
He's starring it. He's also writing it as well, because obviously Forgetting Sarah Marshall ends on a very Muppety note. It's like, that was the thing which I was quite pleasantly surprised by, that film, is how it took this really bizarre twist into puppetry. So who are your favourite Muppets, not being as when they're not babies, Muppet Babies?
Kermit every time. Every single time.
That's a tough one. See, I like Ralph, the piano one, but I think out of all of them, it's probably got to be Gonzo.
I see between Gonzo and Kermit. I used to like Fozzie as a kid. Fozzie was definitely my favourite when I was a kid.
No, see, it was weird. That whole, like, the fact that everyone used to boo on, hate on Fozzy, I kind of got behind that for some reason and hated them. And then I know too many people that loved Animal, which kind of, he became the obvious choice that everyone that got, as people got older, they liked him. So that kind of turned me off him. So I like Gonzo.
Yeah, see, I would have thought Kermit would be the obvious choice, but I don't care because he's awesome. So
Statler and Waldorf are pretty good as well.
They're hilarious.
I'm not quite as keen on the current voices they've got for them, but
who's doing the new voice?
Not sure. They were doing like shorts on YouTube for a while,
right?
Actually, it wasn't the voices so much as the puppets. I think I was okay with the voices. It was like the new puppets they'd made for them. I wasn't quite so keen on. I'm really looking forward to the new movie, and sort of,
I'd like to find a way to somehow work Oscar the Grouch into it.
Well, I'm sure there'll be cameos and stuff. I think they're casting generally sort of interesting people as well, like they did with Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah.
But I'd be interested to see them do a straightforward Muppet show off the back of this, because I think it kind The way I was thinking is, if you take any sort of good episode of Saturday Night Live and the guests they've got on Saturday Night Live when the episode
is puppets,
and then you think, okay, now imagine Kermit the Frog introducing them, and you think, that's much better. I'd rather watch that than Saturday Night Live. I'd rather see...
I must admit, I was surprised the Muppet Show originally got cancelled. Was it just that they thought it ran out of steam?
Probably. It ran a lot of episodes in 5 seasons.
Mm.
But yeah, I was really young when it ended, but I remember watching it as a kid, and really, it was like highlight of Saturday evening, watching that after Grandstand.
But yeah, I could see that getting a successful relaunch, I think.
But yeah,
possibly, yeah.
But yeah, I really see, here's our special guest, Zach Galifianakis, or here's our special guest, John Hamm.
That'd be awesome, yeah.
Just, yeah, you can imagine. I mean, I'm pretty sure they've done a Mad Men parody on Sesame Street already, but...
Really?
They've done... Law and Order Special Victims Unit parodies on Sesame Street.
Is Sesame Street still going strong?
Yes, it is, yeah.
I did not know that.
You had that, that was that recent Ricky Gervais one was on there with Elmo.
And then
you had Katy Perry was on there recently.
I did not know that.
Saw the light of day only because they deemed it not suitable for airing. So then it spread like wildfire on the internet and became a skit on Saturday Night Live.
I did not know this was...
They got a channel with like old and new clips on. But yeah, the other thing I like about what I've seen of the new Muppet movie is they've got a new Muppet in there, but they've not over-designed him. He's like very simplistic. He's almost like one of the ones which are just like, you can take the eyes and nose and hair off and turn them into another Muppet quite easy. Because I think when they've tried to bring new Muppets in before, like the one they had for Muppets Tonight... Which I think
he's appeared.
Yeah, they kind of look a bit too over-designed compared to the old ones.
Yeah, it just doesn't fit in.
I'll try and put some links in the notes for those people who've not seen those trailers. There's one, Green with Envy, and then there's another one which parodies Hangover 2's trailer.
So basically, ignore the Muppet Babies and just watch...
Watch the old Muppet films.
I say the Muppet Babies isn't as bad as you remember it as being. I think you might like it if you went back and watched it again.
See, that's the thing. I don't remember it being bad because I used to always just turn it over in the first place, which is just possibly the look of it as a child.
It's probably because you heard Miss Piggy open her mouth and thought, no, don't want that, change channel.
I don't mind Miss Piggy. She's all right.
The thing I did see when I was reading up about it is there was a sister show I'd never heard of, mainly because it only lasted 3 episodes. But there was a sister show called Jim Henson's Little Muppet Monsters.
Oh.
Which I know very little about, because I only just noticed it like...
Is it completely new characters, or...?
Let me see, there's a YouTube clip of it. Remember this show, Little Muppet Monsters, with a short-lived Muppet production, in which 3 Muppet children, Tug, Boo and Molly, would put on television shows from the basement of the Muppet House.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, so it's... it's like... cartoon and live-action Muppets.
Sounds awful.
So it's like cartoons of the Muppets, but they're not babies this time. There.
So I hope the success of the new Muppet film means Fraggle Rock comes back.
Well, that won't, because Fraggle Rock belongs to not Disney. It belongs to HIT. So
what? Disney didn't buy it?
No, that was the one. Yeah, so Disney got Muppets and a bunch of other stuff. Sesame Street still with Children's Television Workshop. And yeah. Fraggle Rock.
They've still got the deal for Kermit to appear on Sesame Street, though, right?
Yes, I think so, yeah. And then HIT have got Fraggle Rock. And the HIT were developing a Fraggle Rock film, but I've not heard much about it since then.
Can I go to the toilet quickly?
Okay, yeah, we'll
pause it. Pause recording.
Pause there.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.